Welcome to the Live Up podcast, where we watch the movies from our youth to see if they live up. Quick note on how this episode will go. We will review, discuss, and score the movie in question to see if it lives up to us as adults and whether it lives up to kids today. Listeners who have listened for a while, or if you're new, please leave us a review, like us, subscribe. That's super helpful. You could find us on all the socials at Live Up Pod, la da 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 da. I'm Jess Lauderman.
And I'm Amanda Treat. Today, we start 2024 with our first ever movie review of a movie based on a board game. And it's not Battleship. We're looking at you, Rihanna. We know you were in Battleship. That movie was terrible. But today, we are revisiting the cult classic from 1985. It's Clue.
Clue.
Jess, do you remember watching this movie as a kid?
I do, but no, I don't remember exactly when I first watched it, and I think I didn't watch it when I was really young. I think I was a teenager. I was a little bit older, because I was old enough to have some nostalgia for the board game, which is funny to me, because that means that I was watching all these other R-rated movies we reviewed, like Coming to America and Die Hard and Silence of the Lambs. I saw all those movies before I had ever seen this movie, which is kind of funny. But I watched it like a handful of times, but it's not one of those movies that was on rotation all the time. And I watched it just yesterday with my daughter Lily, who's almost 12, and it was also just pouring rain out, so it was like kind of the perfect setting to watch. But what about you?
Well, all our Laserdisc enthusiasts, hold my beer, because I watched this on...
There are some who listen.
I watched this on Betamax.
That's crazy.
Does anybody remember Betamax?
No. I mean, was Betamax around in 1985?
It came out around or probably a little bit after VHS cassettes. So we all had VCRs when we were kids in the 80s and 90s until DVD players came along. But my dad went for the competitor, which was Betamax. There was a whole separate size of cassettes.
Yeah,
different
I remember
players.
That.
I just remember that we had to go to the weird video store to get the beta tapes. And it was like this little
I wonder what
wall.
Became of that store.
Yeah, I think like the whole back third of it was probably like pornography or something, like the adult section. And they had like two shelves of beta tapes, and we probably rented all of them because it was really, really hard to find Betamax tapes. But my dad had invested in a Betamax projector, and right around that same time, my parents put this addition onto their house, and one of the rooms had cathedral ceilings. Didn't have any furniture in it, so we used to have all
Perfect.
The kids in the neighborhood over with, like, bring your sleeping bag, and we would lie on the floor, and he would project the movies on the ceiling. So it was kind of awesome.
Yeah.
That's how I watched Clue. I watched it on the ceiling from a Betamax projector.
Does your dad still have it?
Probably. Like, I bet if we dig into the basement deep enough, I bet it's still down there. But I don't think we actually owned any Betamax tapes the same way, you know, like everyone had like the Disney clamshells, the VHS tapes, or like you tape things off a TV and it was all VHS, but I can't remember owning a single Betamax movie.
Yeah, I feel like we probably rented this more than watched it on TV, now that I think about it, because I remember watching everything from start to finish. It's not like Troop Beverly Hills or like Overboard where I'd come in the middle or something. So I'm pretty sure we rented this too.
I do want to mention that, so my husband Jeremy is a few years older than we are, and we were hanging out with some of his friends last night as well. And when talking about Clue, they all remember that when it was released into the theater, instead of the three endings you get to watch now when you watch it at home, you only got one of the endings.
So I had no idea that that was what they did.
That was like this weird marketing thing they tried to do. And their thought was, oh, if people really like this, they'll go back and
find
a theater showing the other endings and watch it three times. But no one ended up doing that. So it wasn't a huge box office success, but everybody since loves it because you do get to watch the three endings back to back to back now, which is, I think, a lot more fun.
You know, I didn't realize that that was the intention, that they had three different endings. But I think that even I remember as a kid, like I remembered there were multiple endings. So either, whenever you rented it, whether it's like,
yeah, the Betamax had all three endings.
Yeah.
I think when they released it, when it came out of the theater and they moved it to either VHS or Betamax, Or probably Laserdisc. I'm sure there's Laserdisc versions of this out there, too.
I'm sure there are. Maybe I saw them and don't remember.
But yeah, you get all three endings back to back to back, and they've given each ending a little card in between, like, it could have ended like this, or maybe it ended like that. But this is how it actually happened, and that wasn't in the theater at all. That got added when it was released on video.
When I watched this yesterday, I knew that there were multiple endings, and I remembered the "this is how it really happens" ending, but I did not remember what the other two were. I was almost watching it fresh.
I could remember the final ending, and okay, listeners, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert!
1985. We're going to go through all three of these endings. Yeah, if you want to be surprised, please stop the podcast now. This is a murder mystery. We're going to spoil it for you. I definitely remember the final two endings, and I don't know why I remembered the Mrs. Peacock one, but something about that stuck with me. Like, I remember there was one where they went all in on her being the crazy murderer. It is, yeah. Eileen Brennan brings a lot of energy to that ending. It's great.
It's my favorite ending. It's Miss Peacock, because she's such a drunk hot mess. I just love when the ending with her killing everybody is so good.
Oh, yeah, let the train person who did it all. Yeah,
awesome. It's so good.
All right, before we spoil the ending, Jess, would you like to have a plot summary of the rest of the movie?
Sure. All right. So Clue, obviously it's based on the board game, and there's a million different versions of it now. I thought of it as like a lower gentry mystery theater, kind of murder with a monocle. I was thinking of it as almost a prequel to Knives Out, if folks are familiar with those kinds of movies.
Ooh,
it definitely has. It's so funny, when I was watching it, I was like, oh, this is reminding me of Knives Out, which really probably means that Knives Out is purposely ripping off of Clue. And the reason why it reminded me of Knives Out is that basically you invite a bunch of shitty rich people to a fancy location and watch them all turn on each other. And the help always gets killed first. It's like it's a rule. So that's
class warfare, but not in the direction we like.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And that's essentially what it's about. One thing that I did think was really fun, and the multiple endings plays into this, is just the adherence, I think, to the board game Clue. I know that sounds really weird, but you have obviously all the character names, like we're saying Miss Peacock, and there's Miss Scarlet, Professor Plum, and all that. But you also have all the murder weapons that are the same from the game. This is why I liked the multiple endings, because that actually mirrors how you play. Because you have your own reality of who you suspect is the murderer and the location and the weapon, and everybody's reality is a little bit different for what they, or everyone's like suspicion is a little bit different. So the multiple endings I kind of thought of as like the wrong answers, you know, when someone's like, I got it, and they try to guess and maybe it's wrong, but it seems right to them. Yeah, so my daughter and I were talking about that, and we thought that was really clever at the end, that it sort of just felt like playing the game.
I was reading that when they gave the actors the scripts, they didn't tell them that there were going to be multiple endings or who the murderer was. So right up until the moment where it was revealed you're the murderer, like, the actors were still acting innocent and suspecting everyone else around them of, okay, maybe that guy's the murderer. Like, oh, she probably
that's so
did it.
Funny.
And then, like, would flip the page finally when they're given the right ending and, like, oh, I'm the murderer. Shoot. Okay. Go for it.
That's so fun.
So I think that's a fun way to, you really can't tell from the performances which one might be masking guilt, because the actors had no idea.
To me, that makes it more fun. And it does just mirror the idea of just a board game. So I thought the adherence to the game was kind of fun. And the sets and everything and the costumes just look like the original game, but not in a cartoonish way.
And I saw that in your notes. You left me a comment about, since I usually really highlight and dislike product placement, but this whole thing is Clue, the board game. I think because you go into it knowing this is based on a game that most of us had in our houses, like, there's no way around the fact that this is blatant product placement, but that almost lowered my expectations for the movie. And then this movie delivers way more than it should, considering it's based on
absolutely.
A board game. The dialogue shouldn't be that funny. The scenery is amazing. And they even, like, you're calling out that they put all sorts of little nods to the game without hitting you over the head with it. You know, I actually noticed, because the cover of the game I had in our house when I was a kid, they show all the characters sitting around the library with their weapons or something right on the cover of the game, but they're all dressed in the colors of their characters.
Oh, sure.
And for this, it was like, wait, why is Miss White showing up in a completely black outfit? Like, yes, she's murderer widow, but
sort of.
Yeah, she's a mourning. She's wearing black. That makes sense. And then also the fact that they're being given these aliases, that wasn't their actual names, because that would be silly to have a group of friends who had entirely color-themed names. So they don't know to dress in the color because they don't know what their alias is going to be, I don't think, till they get there, which, okay, that makes more sense than it should. Somebody put more thought into this than I would have given them credit for. They could have made this really, really dumb, and they didn't.
And they didn't. And listeners, just so you know, Amanda definitely gets on her soapbox about not liking certain product placement.
Yeah, no, I mean,
in the 80s and 90s.
If all of a sudden, you know, Wadsworth the butler had whipped around and was like, and I clean the kitchen using this product. Like
using this product, yeah.
Yeah, like that is what gets me really riled up more than, I mean, we know it's Clue. It's a board game.
Right.
You know, they're not drinking Coke in it. Yeah. Right. There isn't an ad for other products going on in this movie. So I'm okay with this.
Yeah. One thing I don't know is if kids these days play the original Clue. I mean, maybe it's just in our house. We have two different types of Clue and neither of them are like the original. So one of them is the Harry Potter Clue version,
yeah,
which has like a slightly different set of rules. And the other Clue, I think it might have references to the original, but isn't quite the original. So that was just one thing for kids today. Like, I mean, even like my daughter didn't really understand like, the wrench and the rope when all the characters are handed weapons.
No, I think you're right. Because there's definitely a Game of Thrones version of Clue. And they've just made all these sort of rebrands of it. But they definitely don't have the original weapons. So, and they don't have the original names. You could kill someone as Hermione, but not with a rope and not in the library or whatever.
Yeah, so I think for like kids today watching it, it's just sort of like a madcap mystery movie versus something that they know of from a board game. For like, I feel like when I watched it, I thought that part was, when I was a kid, I thought that was fun, that it's Miss Scarlet and Professor Plum up there. But, you know, kids these days, I'm not sure if they recognize that. I don't think it matters, though. Really, because they made a decent movie. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if this were stupid and you absolutely had to know that someone could murder somebody with a candlestick in the original board game, that would be a sign of a very bad movie if it was hinging on that, because it's almost like a MacGuffin at that point. But yeah, they could have done anything with this, and it came out quite well considering its constraints of being based on a board game.
So Wadsworth, who is the Tim Curry character, he's not in the game. I actually don't remember. He's not.
No, I don't think there's a butler. There wasn't a butler, though, that I remember. So we have Wadsworth, who is played by Tim Curry. And you know what? Such a great addition. Not in the board game, but one of the best things about this movie is the Tim Curry energy that he brings into this.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely.
He's doing that stereotypical butler, like he's so conservative and it's such dry deadpan humor, but he just keeps cranking it up and up and up till you get to the ending and he's just complete chaos. Like the way the final moments of this film are him just running around the house up and down the stairs and he's yelling things and everybody else is just following him around. Like, I saw an interview with Michael McKean, who plays Mr. Green in this. He's like, we all felt so bad for Tim Curry because all the dialogue at the end of this film is just him, like, rapid fire talking. Like, he had to memorize all those lines. He had all the choreography, and they're just quietly following him around and occasionally going, then what? And letting him do all the acting. Yeah, no, he's great. He brings so much energy into this. It's
so awesome. Much. I keep thinking of it as a madcap energy at the end where he basically has to go through all three endings. At some point in the movie, if folks don't remember, he's like, of course, it's obvious. This is what happens. And he basically goes on to do a fast forward of the whole movie and recreates it for you in about a minute and runs all over the house.
He's talking so fast, I can't keep up with him.
I can't either.
The third one, it's just like, I don't know who did what, but you know what? It's funny. Just keep killing
it's everybody. Funny. Go, and go. It's fun to watch. So it, and that's my memory of this movie. So when the movie started, I felt like it was really slow rewatching this because I was like, oh my God, this movie is so much slower than I remember, because basically my memory is Tim Curry like running all over the place like a lunatic with everybody following him.
He doesn't start that way, but he does. He has a couple of lines, or all the lines coming out of his mouth, they're very deadpan and so ridiculous. And he's doing them all with such a straight butler face. Like, someone is asking about, like, what he does for a living, and he's like, I buttle, sir. Like, it's just this very...
I thought that was so funny.
That's not even the word. Buttle. I bottle. Or like when they go into the kitchen and find the cook dead in the middle of the movie, and he insists that they drag the body out of the kitchen, and everyone's just like, why would we touch the body? And he just says, I'm the butler. I like to keep the kitchen clean. And it's just such a flat deadpan. It's so funny. And yeah, at that point in the movie, funny. Like the horror of people starting to die all over this house is just being kind of put to the side, and you're just amused by how many people they end up killing in this movie.
Because right? At some fantastic. Point it's sort of a punchline that he delivers some of that punchline. So, you know, and it's like, all right, should we move in the study? Like whatever body they find, and they just like move this body into the study.
They're hucking them over the furniture and... Or, like, there's a scene where there's a cop in the house and they have to pretend that they Weekend at Bernie's the whole situation. So they're, like, moving bodies around, making it look like there's some weird 1950s orgy going on in the side room. And,
The funny part about that scene is that the cop is kind of into it. The cop is just like, oh, yeah, it's America. It's fine.
Free country. You want to have an orgy in that room? Whatever.
There's nothing wrong here.
Yeah. Just don't let that guy drive home drunk.
Sometimes I do get confused between Clue and Rocky Horror, which is another movie of that takes place in a creepy house in the rain, random motorists, people die, and Tim Curry is just complete chaos in that one, too.
There's certain lines when the motorist shows up and asks to use the phone that I immediately thought, okay, no, Brad says that in the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Right?
Like, hi, I caught you at home. Can I use your phone?
Yes. Like the Janet song is going to start.
Yeah, that character's just called the motorist, but if they'd named him Brad, that just would have been too perfect. Because it's the exact same scenario of you've just walked in on some really weird party going on, and I just need the phone for my broken down car.
Yeah, I had definitely seen this movie first before I saw Rocky Horror.
Oh, yeah.
But when I saw Rocky Horror, I was like, oh, this makes sense that Tim Curry would be, like, leading this charge because, you know, this is just the kind of actor he is, I guess.
Probably in my mid to late teens, I took my younger sister to go see Muppet Treasure Island. And Tim Curry is playing Long John Silver in that and making all the facial expressions that finally tied all these movies together. And that was the moment I was like, oh, wait. Tim Curry's that actor from Clue. And, oh my God, he's that guy from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Because I didn't even recognize them being the same person. You know, he's got all the face makeup on in Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
His just facial expressions are so contorted and different in Rocky Horror. I did not realize it was the same actor until I saw him kind of pull it all together as a pirate in a Muppet movie.
As a pirate in a Muppet movie?
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, Tim Curry is just phenomenal.
He's phenomenal. He's great. And he definitely focus group of one, but my daughter got great amusement out of him, too. She laughed at all the lines that you should laugh at for Tim Curry. Yeah. Super fun. But, yeah, the only thing is, like, I just didn't remember that it was, like, kind of a slow start. But that's not really like a knock
on the
movie.
I didn't either, honestly.
It's more my memory of it. Yeah. I thought the whole movie was like crazy Tim Curry pandemonium. But then I realized like, wait, I think I'm like thinking of Rocky Horror and this movie at the same time. So that's...
And Rocky Horror honestly starts a little slow if you think about it. And ends a little slow if you think about it.
The ending of Rocky Horror is like, you might as well just like stop the movie halfway and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
For Rocky Horror. Yeah.
We'll review that at the some case point. Here. We'll have an After Dark on that one.
We will.
So do you want to talk about Miss Scarlet?
Yeah, let's talk about her. So Miss Scarlet, she's the hussy. Just to remind folks, I should have said this in the overview, but they're basically all being blackmailed by Mr. Body or by some faceless person who has been blackmailing them for years. And then they all come to this dinner party on this creepy night in the rain all together. And Wadsworth is the Tim Curry character is the butler, though you find out later he's not really the butler. Spoiler alert. So Miss Scarlet
came out in 1985. They'll be fine.
Yeah, it's fine. So Miss Scarlet is being blackmailed for being a madam, I guess. I guess she's basically a pimp in D.C. And I guess that, or she's paying off the cops, something like that.
No, she's definitely a madam, too.
I think
she's got a whole empire.
The funny thing for my daughter Lily, like she didn't really, and I don't think as a kid, did you know as a kid that she was essentially a madam?
No.
Because I didn't, no, I completely went over my head as a kid. Yeah. It yeah, honestly no, it went just, over Lily's
she's
head.
She's doing something wrong, and I don't know what it is.
And I don't know what it is.
It's fine.
Yeah. And it seems to involve that other guy, too. Yeah, and you don't really know. But I had to sort of explain. I was like, Lily, do you know what she is and what she's being blackmailed for? And my daughter was like, no. And then, I mean, she knows what, like, prostitution is. And yeah. when I was like, do you know what a prostitute is? And she's like, oh, yeah. But she didn't make that connection. Then I had to start explaining, like, escort services.
I'm really glad this movie triggered this mother-daughter talk. It's a very precious really moment. Nice.
But I was, as I was explaining this to her, I was like, oh my God, there's no way that I caught all of this when I was a kid.
Oh, God, no. And the thing is, yeah. too, as all these characters arrive at the house, there's a scene where they go around the room and it gets revealed what each of them is being blackmailed
That's right.
for. And she's the first one. Most of them are kind of like, no, I'm not. No, I didn't. And it's
yeah, I didn't do that.
Wadsworth, yeah. the butler, who's revealing each of their secrets. But when they get to Miss Scarlet, and she's played by Leslie Ann Warren, who does an awesome job at this. Miss Scarlet's just like, yes, I did this. And no shame at all. And is, she's flaunting it. Like, she could not care less that the entire room now knows what she does and what she's being blackmailed for. She thinks it's so much fun. Like, she's having a great time. So yeah. she's a fun character to have in there because she's not, the rest of them are anxious and nervous, and she is just being sultry. She is joking. She's just being a lot of fun with the whole thing. So it's a different mood yeah. coming from that side of the room.
Yeah. It's like, she's like, I don't have anything to hide. And I think that was kind of fun. And she has this great line where Miss White, who like goes around killing her husband, says like, my husband just lays around on his back all day. And Miss Scarlet's like, well, that sounds like a lot of work, or that sounds like hard work.
We would not have picked up on that as a kid, but this fear
no
was
way.
Like, oh, that's funny.
Yeah. It is funny. And, like, so she keeps like throwing in these little like sultry zingers that are super fun. Yeah. That yeah. are completely over kids' heads.
All right. Leslie Ann Warren does a great job as Miss Scarlet, but you know who is supposed to play Miss Scarlet?
I don't.
Carrie Fisher.
No way! Okay, that might have been better.
Yeah, no, she was signed up for it, all in, contracts, etc., and then she suddenly went to rehab. And even with that, everybody in the cast and the director and the producers were like, no, it's okay. We'll wait, or we can work around this. And it was the insurance company from the movie that was like, no, absolutely not. Like, that's such a risk that you're trying to wait for someone to get out of rehab. Like, no. So they wouldn't let them wait. And they had to recast it. But I think Leslie Ann Warren does a great job at that. So
she does a great job.
It's, and it's one of those, like, what could have been. That would have been extra hilarious. It would have been Carrie Fisher.
Oh, my God. I had no idea. And I agree. Yeah. I think this movie would have been off the charts.
Oh, my God.
If she was Miss Scarlet.
Because she's...
Oh, my God.
I don't know if... Like, everyone remembers, obviously, she's Princess Leia. But do you remember how funny she is in When Harry Met Sally? She is one of the funniest things in that
she's
movie.
She's perfection.
Yeah. yeah. She's outperforming Meg Ryan. She is toe-to-toe with Bruno Kirby and Billy Crystal. Like, she is so funny in that movie. So, yeah, I think she would have really brought some energy. Some of I'm about to go to rehab energy into this movie.
Oh, she would have been so good in this.
It would have been good. So, yeah, we can put that on our... we're starting to slowly accumulate a list of, like, oh, it was great the way it is, but we, when we find out that Angelica Houston was almost in Beetlejuice, we think about what could have been, and, oh.
What could have been.
That would have been awesome.
I think in this case, it would have made, I think it would have been a different type of cult hit, though, if she was in there. Because, I mean, 100% chance she would have crushed this role.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But no regrets. This is still a really funny character. A lot of energy. She gets her own. One of the endings is sort of devoted to Miss Scarlet. And I thought that one was extremely funny because they have this running gag where they can't count the amount of bullets.
Oh, that's right.
And they keep holding this gun up to each other like, I'm going to shoot. Like, no, you're out of bullets because you have this many and this many and that many bullets. No, we shot that many and that many and that. And they can't do the math on it. And they're pretty sure there's no bullets in it. And then right at the end, of course, Wadsworth the butler fires it off, not expecting it to go off, and shoots the chandelier down again. So you also get the fun line. He gets to yell, Scarlet, I don't give a damn at the end of that version.
I love that.
She's getting arrested.
Oh, that's yeah, right.
She's getting arrested, and as they're taking her away, she says some quip to him, and Wadsworth, Tim Curry, is just Gotta go Gone with the Wind with that line.
That's good.
Yep.
I thought she was good. I liked her ending that she's the one that murdered people. That's the first ending. That was fun.
Yeah. But we should probably go through the other colored characters we have here.
Who's next, Amanda?
Let's go Mustard Yellow here. So we've got Colonel Mustard, played by Martin Mull. The first one to show up at the house, and we think there's a couple of reasons he's being blackmailed. He's not totally clear, because he won't admit to any of it. You picked up on it, that he may or may not be a client of Miss Scarlet's, and
right.
He may or may not be selling war secrets or military weapons. I don't even know. They don't really say what he's being accused of, but it's bad enough he's paying the blackmailer.
Yeah. I mean, you're led to believe it's because he's a client of Miss Scarlet. And then at one of the endings, it comes out, I think the last ending, that he was basically selling war secrets or some sort of like weaponry to someone he wasn't supposed to. And that's why he killed the motorist, because the motorist used to work for him.
Yeah.
It's kind of vague. I actually thought he was the weakest character. No, this nothing to do with his performance. He plays a good role, but like he's just like a game piece with a mustache in my mind.
Yeah, he really is. I, for some reason, so Colonel Mustard here is played by Martin Mull, who, if you grew up in the 80s, you remember him as just popped into the Golden Girls.
He was in a lot of things.
Roseanne. He was in all these shows. Oh, like, he's a very familiar comedic actor. And I don't know why, but because I don't think he ever did anything wrong, but he's always been on that list of actors that I just don't like their acting. I don't know. It's like,
but you have a weird list of actors because
Adam
you
Driver and you
I know
me go
inexplicably
on, like, Jake Gyllenhaal. Like, I've got this list of actors that I'm just like, I don't like them.
You mean these lists of like very talented actors that you like don't like for no reason?
No, and I can admit they're talented, and I know when they're in good movies, and that's great. And I just don't like certain actors. I don't know why. Martin Mull's like the OG actor I never liked. I don't know why.
Yeah. Like, he kind of really does look like a creepy uncle, really. He has like the gross mustache.
All I can think of is he must have appeared on some TV show I watched as a kid and been the bad guy. And like that just stuck with
me. Just stuck.
That, was he doing something like Mel Gibson level anti-Semitism? Was he doing something? And he didn't. He never did anything wrong. He's never had any scandals.
He's just in your Adam Driver category.
Yeah, I don't know.
Inexplicable.
I'm sorry to Martin Mull. I really have no reason to. It's illogical that I don't like you, but I just don't like you. All right. Well, so after he arrives, the next person to arrive is Mrs. White, played by Madeline Kahn, who, I mean, I love her in anything. She even had that really brief cameo in the Muppet movie we watched.
Which was great.
Yeah. Just love some Madeline Kahn. Put her in everything. She's so funny.
Everything.
She's delightfully weird in this. She's playing a widow of many murdered husbands.
And she's presumably being blackmailed for murdering her most recent husband.
Yeah.
Which she's just sort of like, she's not trying, she's like denying it, but not really denying it. She's just like,
yeah, no,
maybe.
She's talking around it. Oh God, what are some of the things? I mean, like that line about, yeah, he's mostly on his back these days. And you pick up, oh, he's in a casket somewhere because he's been murdered.
She has these fun lines like, husbands are like Kleenex, they should be soft and disposable. Like, you know, she has these like little lines in there. But you're so right. She's like delightfully weird because she's like a little bit unhinged is too strong of a word. But her character
there's one scene. I forget what's going on the other side of the room. The other characters are getting themselves all wound up. Like, who did it? And like, oh my God, is the wine poison? And just really getting anxious. And across the room, you just hear a glass shatter, and she's just standing next to the fireplace, and she just threw her glass at it and broke it to, like, disrupt the conversation.
That's right, she did. She just threw the glass.
Okay, guys, moving along. Yeah, so she's just super weird. I love her. She and the third ending, they let her ad-lib the whole scenario where they're explaining that she found out Yvette the maid was sleeping with her husband, and she just ad-libs this whole scene about rage and how much rage she felt towards the maid, who she didn't even know at the time. But she just gets this line. She's like, flames up the side of my face. And like, she's being so over the top dramatic. And it doesn't even make sense. But just watching Madeline Kahn express jealous rage with the weirdest kind of wording. It's so funny. I don't know. She's great.
It's funny. It got a laugh out of my daughter, too, because it was so unhinged. It was like she went on this crazy rant.
Yeah, and she wasn't denying murdering anyone.
I actually feel like there could have been another ending where she's the killer, and then you would have been like, yeah, that totally makes sense, because she looks like a psychopath.
You know what she reminds me of is, God, the character from Chicago that Catherine Zeta-Jones plays.
Oh, yeah.
She's got kind of the haircut.
She had it coming.
She's singing I Had It Coming in the back of this whole movie. Like, I'm not confessing to anything, but if I did it, he had it coming.
But I feel like there's, like, essence of Buffalo Bill about her, too. She seems like a serial killer. She definitely got some laughs out of me and my daughter watching this. Yeah. So it was fun to rewatch her in this. Because she's kind of exactly how I remembered her in this, which is in and of itself kind of fun.
Yeah, she comes through the background of scenes and, you know, she's not the star of the show, but she's always just looking a little bit devious and always a little maniacal. Yeah. And you kind of want to see her do something crazy at any given moment.
You kind of expect her to do something crazy. And rewatching this, I was like, wait, does she? I actually kept expecting her, even though I've seen this movie before. I'm like, does she do something insane here? I feel like she does something insane here.
We don't get to see the on-screen insane, unfortunately.
Bring her back. Make her the serial killer of the movie. That would be fun. Yeah.
Then, meanwhile, another podcast favorite shows up right behind her. Mrs. Peacock, played by our favorite train wreck mom, Eileen Brennan.
Remind listeners what else she was a train wreck mom in.
This is a callback to our Babes in Toyland episode, which we just released this past Christmas. She is the funniest thing in that movie. And she doesn't have to sing.
Yeah, she was a favorite.
She's terrific. Yeah. But yeah, no, Eileen Brennan is just great at being this out of control, probably drunk, like screaming at weird moments, just getting all riled up about
screaming
stuff.
She's a hot mess.
Such a mess. Yeah. And she has this scene pretty early on where they're all awkwardly sitting at the dinner table and they don't know why they're there and they don't know who anybody else is. And she just can't stop talking. And she's just rambling.
The silence.
Yeah. And they even are telling her, like, what if we just let it be silent? And she was like, no, we can't do that.
What I thought was like kind of like weird, but again, I kind of appreciated about that scene is that there's no like undertone of music. There's nothing playing in the background. It's just forks on plates and they're all dressed really nicely. And I think it's done so you could feel the awkwardness. So then when Miss Peacock, when Eileen Brennan starts just like verbal
Words
diarrhea
out, like,
all over the
rambling.
Place. Yeah, it makes it more awkward, but really kind of funny because you have this like, it's completely quiet except for her. She's just talking complete nonsense. So anyway, so she's being bribed for access to her senator husband.
Yes, she's been selling access to her husband who's a senator. Some of the other characters recognize her, and that comes out.
As a kid, I remember thinking she was sort of a waste of space, least favorite character. She didn't resonate with me as a kid, but watching as an adult, now, just yesterday, I was like, she was my favorite character. She was so funny.
We know people like that now. Like, there's always person who just won't shut up. And she's absolutely that person, like, times 11 in this movie. Train wreck. And they've put her in this, apparently it's like peahen feathers on because she's Mrs. Peacock. But I mean, every time she turns her head, it's just like feathers going in all these different directions. She looks
her
crazy.
Outfit's a hot mess. Yeah.
Yeah, she kind of looks like a Muppet dressed her. I mean, it's nuts.
And so, she has her own ending where the second ending is that she killed everybody. And that is my favorite because she's the least likely because she's just so messy. There's at some point they're all like, what are we going to do? The cook is dead. And she's just like downing drinks in the corner.
Yeah. She comes across as so ineffective and so incapable of doing anything competent. That the idea that she masterminded the whole thing is really funny.
I know. It's my favorite ending. I love it.
She also, there's the moment where they're doing the weekend at Bernie's with the corpses in front of the cop. And they have her positioned behind a curtain. And then she's sticking her arms through the dead cook's armpits.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And pretending to make out with one of the other characters, and just the ick look on her face as she's trapped behind this curtain with a corpse sandwich between her and the other person. Like, she's just cringing to the extreme, and it's just so funny. Oh, I'm starting to... Eileen Brennan's just really growing on me, even though we've seen one really bad movie, and then now in Clue.
Yeah, but she was kind of a highlight in Babes in Toyland, so that's fine. And I think that the whole Weekend at Bernie's thing was that gag still landed. It was still funny.
No, they took Weekend at Bernie's and made it so much ickier, and it was really funny. All right, then... I wouldn't have recognized him because he is so friggin' young, but Michael McKean shows up at the door playing Mr. Green.
Yeah, so young. And I've most recently seen him in Better Call Saul. I know he's been in everything.
He's so different now.
He's a great actor. And when he came on screen, I'm like, wait, is that... I recognized him, yet I almost didn't. I'm like, is that just a young actor who looks like him? Because he's so young in this. He's like baby-faced.
He's so crazy young. But at the same time, like, I'd seen him in... Well, no, I probably hadn't seen Spinal Tap before I saw Clue. But he doesn't look anything like his character in Spinal Tap.
Nothing.
In this movie. No. He's very prim and proper. He's got his glasses, and it's just super, super preppy. He looks nothing like his Spinal Tap character at all.
Yeah, and he's being blackmailed for being, air quote, a homosexual. And it's, like, kind of weird, I have to say. And I wasn't just clutching my pearls as a fellow gay person, but it was dated. Yeah. I actually had to explain to Lily, I was like, do you understand why he's being blackmailed? And she's like, no. Because he does the whole thing, like, I'm a homosexual and I'm not ashamed. And Lily didn't get it because I guess it's, like, progress. She didn't understand that that's, like, a blackmailable thing.
One thing we do need to consider is that this movie's not set in 1985.
That's true, yeah.
It's a specific date, actually.
1954.
What is it? Yes, it's set on Wednesday, June 9th, 1954, because the cook is listening to the McCarthy hearings the kitchen. Yeah. It was the hearing where somebody finally had that outburst, like, have you no decency, and, like, kind of started to turn everything around at that. But... yeah, leading up to that moment, it was, you know, don't you dare get accused of being a socialist, a communist, and I think homosexual was in there too. Like, that
that's
you
right.
get
yeah.
completely blacklisted from whatever career you were in, you'd be like an outcast. So I did in my notes as we were watching this, because it's like, oh, Mrs. White just killed a lot of husbands, and, like, you know, he's stealing military secrets, and she's selling access to the government, and then we get to him, and I just wrote, Green is gay. That's it?
Like, right, that's it. So, yeah, and that's something for younger viewers that they wouldn't... I mean, I guess that if they're old enough to understand, like, oh, this is set in another time. But, like, it just almost goes over their heads. She didn't really get it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny.
That takes some studying of the McCarthy era, which, honestly,
I know.
My high school, they got us through, like, World War II, and then it was suddenly finals week, and we had to rush all the way through the rest of history in, like, 1 week. Yeah. So we didn't spend much time on that. I don't think kids today are taught a lot about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's playing it pretty... I was about to say playing it pretty straight for a gay guy. Like, he
kind of is.
Some...
he's the most fervently, I didn't do anything, kind of.
He's got some funny lines, but, like, they're not... He really is the straight man with all these chaotic characters going on around him. And I mean that in, like, he's the Seinfeld to everyone else's, like, Kramer and Elaine and George.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of Kramers and Elaines.
Yeah. I did see a comment from Michael McKean. So when they sat down to start filming this together, the director made them all watch His Girl Friday. Have you seen that movie?
It's like
fast-paced journalism murder mystery from, I don't know what year that came out. So they all watched that together so that the director could say to them, basically, this is the pace we're going. It's going to be fast and getting faster, faster, faster. And the concept is it's a screwball noir.
I love that descriptor.
Yeah. After reading the description of, okay, this is what the director told them, this is how we're filming it, Michael McKean said, we were all on the same page as to the level of farce we were doing. Comedy is comedy, but farce is what happens on the worst day of your life. And I thought that was a really good description, too, because for all of these characters, going into this house and everybody getting murdered. Like, this is the worst day of their life. And they're literally running through a door, running up the stairs, crashing into each other on the stairs.
And there's another body. And there's
it's so ridiculous, over the top, but also with these very high stakes of people are just being murdered left and right. And I thought Michael McKean nailed the tone of that with that quote. That's very much what this movie is for me.
I still felt like it was slightly cringed, his last line, where he basically, in the third ending, the what really happened ending, when he's like the FBI agent. And, you know, at some point, like, J. Edgar Hoover calls, which, by the way, you have to, like, explain to younger people who that is. And he's like, that call was for me. And he's from the FBI. And he basically is like, arrest all these assholes. And he's like, I'm going home to sleep with my wife. And it is just a little cringe at that point. He needs to say cringe, he's not gay.
I think, like, it's supposed to be funny because this thing you thought about him the whole time suddenly gets revealed to be not true.
Right,
but we've
right.
just done so much unpacking of everybody's reveals and everybody's secrets that one just didn't have any consequence compared to, like, oh, she murdered this guy because of that, and she murdered the maid because of this. And that for him to be like, actually, I'm straight, that level of reveal just fell really flat at that point.
I think you're totally right, because the stakes were just so low. Yeah. So that was, like, kind of a slightly cringe part, but I enjoyed seeing him in this because I like seeing him in so many other things that he's done since this. So it was kind of fun to watch him young doing this.
Yeah.
God, we're old.
And speaking of young, also, three-peat, we think, for the podcast. We have Christopher Lloyd in this movie playing Professor Plum.
Yeah, because we've done Who Framed Roger Rabbit. We've done Addams Family. And so this is his third appearance.
And there will be more, because we have not done Back to the Future yet. But
we have not.
Oh, yes, we will.
Yeah, that has to be a future episode.
Actually, speaking of Back to the Future, someone online had suggested the crossover between these two movies. Because if Doc from Back to the Future was in, I think, Back to the Future set in, or right around the same time. It's like 1984.
It was, that movie came out in 1985 as well. This movie
it came out
85,
but it goes back to the 50s, remember?
It does go back to, it goes back to 1955. So
and
close.
You have young Christopher Lloyd, so maybe before he ended up having all these, it sounds like he's an abusive psychiatrist too, or like he's sexually abusing patients.
Yeah, he's basically blackmailed.
He's ickier in this movie than any other place.
Oh, he's the slime ball in this movie. His blackmail is that he slept with a patient, or maybe multiple patients. Yeah.
So the fan theory is before he did that, he helped Marty get back to his present time, and then he turned into a creepy psychiatrist.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, they're all it's all the same timeline.
It's all the same timeline. Okay, that kind of tracks. He looks a lot younger in this movie than he does in Back to the Future, made at the same time.
I mean, it's the crazy hair maybe in Back to the Future, but maybe. He looks like he's 70 years old or something in that, and then this, he looks his actual age.
Yeah.
And a few years after this, he'll be doing Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and we both thought he looked like he was 90 in that. I mean, he looks
he's
so
practically a ghost. Rabbit. I love the idea of it being the same timeline. It's kind of funny. Yeah.
Doc was a little creepy, but he is a doctor.
Right. Which is kind of the theme for this character, Professor Plum, is that he's like a doctor, but like a really terrible, slimy one.
I think you and I had a similar reaction that it is very hard to watch Christopher Lloyd be a pervert. Because he's played so many lovable characters throughout our childhood. And you put a note in, the second he arrives at the house with Miss Scarlet, he puts his hand on her ass and she whips around like she's going to punch him. But I don't know. You don't usually see Christopher Lloyd being that character.
I'm like, Doc, what are you doing? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like unnecessary cringe.
But he's also potentially a murderer here. So, you know, we've got to give him unlikable qualities.
And in the final ending, he basically murdered who he thinks is Mr. Body. Because, is that who he murdered at the end?
Or did he murder the telegram girl?
Oh, no, he murdered the telegram girl.
Who used to be his patient. Yeah.
Right. But he tried to murder.
There's a murder for everybody in the final ending.
He's like, Mr. Body's dead, but he's like not dead. So he's also like a bad doctor, which I think is just sort of like kind of a comedic kind of thing for this.
Yeah.
So
there's a ton of other characters in this movie. Most of them end up as corpses.
Because they're the help. That's why.
I do want to call out. So they have this actor named Lee Ving, that's his actual name, is the guy playing Mr. Body. And mm-hmm. they have said since they literally cast him. He's a perfectly fine actor. You know, he kind of comes across like a little bit slimy. I don't recall seeing Lee Bing in anything else, but they picked him because they wanted the joke, Mr. Body will be leaving soon.
Oh my God.
So literally his name got him that part. Like they just thought it was so silly that they could be able to say, Mr. Body will be leaving soon.
And just if listeners don't remember, Mr. Body is pretending to be the main mastermind, but he's actually the butler. And he gets killed. Yeah.
I think he is the blackmailer in some of the endings. Or maybe
in some of the endings. See, but in the final ending,
yeah.
Mr. Wadsworth is the blackmailer and Mr. Body was his butler.
Yes.
In one of the three endings.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to say, there's like, I was confused. And if you asked me to like just recite the plot of all three of the endings, I would probably get it wrong. But I feel like that's almost beside the point because it was still kind of fun to go through the craziness.
Tim Curry rattles them off so fast that, it is really hard to keep the three strands straight.
Let's do the body count though. So there's Mr. Body, there's the cook, there's the maid, there's the motorist. There's the cop,
police officer.
And then there's the singing telegram.
Yeah.
I think I went out of order there, but that's essentially the body count. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I did go out of order. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's one for each of them with one hero at the end.
That's right. There's one for each of them.
When they choose to do it that way. Now, the first ending that shows chronologically on when you get all three of the endings is a combo of Miss Scarlet and the maid doing it all.
Oh, that's right.
Which
they're doing it together.
An interesting twist because the maid becomes a victim, but for her to kill the first half of the people and then have herself get murdered and then have the murderer kill the rest of the people. Yeah, just kind of a fun twist. I don't know. You could be a victim and a murderer.
We're equal opportunity here.
Everyone gets involved.
The thing with like going through all the characters, all of them collectively together, like basically the cast is really good. I mean, there's such good talent here and they're acting crazy. They're acting unhinged. They're acting creepy. Miss Peacock is just the drunk hot mess. And then collectively they have this like great energy. And especially at the end when they're just like running back and forth, when Wadsworth is like, and then this happened. And then he runs to the kitchen and then this happened and they find all the secret passageways and da 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 da. It kind of all is additive together. So each individual character you could pick apart, but it's really just like the combination of all of them that are kind of fun.
And they're pacing together and the mood of all of them being together. Because in the beginning, when Mr. Body gets killed, they're genuinely terrified. There's someone among them is a murderer. And as more bodies start piling up in the lounge, they get so nonchalant about the murders by the end of it. Like
that final shot
where they open the door and they see the telegram girl's just been shot dead on the front stoop. And they're just like, okay, shut the door. Moving on.
Tim Curry has a great line because they basically do exactly as you said. And he's like, this is getting serious. But he doesn't say it in a serious way at all. Like, it's just like, oh, is it the sixth body that means it's getting serious?
This might put it over.
This might put it over. And he basically says it with an eye roll. Like, it's so casual at this point. Like, gotta lug another body into the study. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, and I remember even as a kid that it hits such a pace by that point. And they've gone through, like, the cop gets murdered. People are running around the house. You just see the front door open and the telegram girl starts singing. And then you just hear, poof, and she's dead.
Yeah.
And it's very funny, considering it's a murder.
And it's so funny.
I remember even as a kid,
funny.
It just seemed so silly and irreverent at that point that, it made me laugh as a kid. So it's probably the funniest of the murders just because at that point they're just going, fuck it, kill her.
Fuck it. And the whole, like, I mean, haven't you busted out with, I am your singing telegram. Just, like, it's future Halloween costume, I think.
Do you know who that is, by the way? That's the lead singer of the Go-Go's.
No way.
It is.
So random. It's a very memorable little scene.
Yeah. No, she's on screen for literally 5 seconds, gets shot, and then that's the end of that. But It's a funny death.
I mean, I think this is where, like you were saying at the beginning, like the a movie about a board game had no right to be this clever and this funny.
It really didn't.
And yeah, like you're basically making the murders get progressively funnier, but not stupid. I mean, that's kind of an interesting line to sort of draw there.
Yeah. No, they really did a good job.
And other things I didn't really notice as a kid, like everything is very connected to politics. You were mentioning like it's a very specific date from the McCarthy hearings. Almost all of the characters has some sort of tie to Washington power, whether they're working for an entity of the government.
They all are from Washington, D.C., and they've deliberately made them drive up, 6 to 10 hours to go. They're somewhere in either Connecticut or Massachusetts.
Because it gives you New England at the beginning.
But then, as the people are arriving, they're pulling in off of Route 41, I think they keep saying. So it's Western Connecticut or Western Massachusetts.
They probably drove by the Beetlejuice house on the way.
Another crossover. So they have a whole series of scenes in this movie, but for some reason, with the characters all together, they decide maybe there's an extra murderer somewhere in the house. So they all split up, which classic, you know.
Yeah.
Haunted house trope, but they pair them up in the most, like, the characters that are going to annoy each other the most get paired together and they go off on their ways and everybody gets a floor. I was watching this with my husband, who at this point was watching them all just like bump into each other over and over again. And he just turned to me and said, "They're not really good at searching this house."
Yes, they are. They're so bad at it.
But they do start finding the secret passages, and they're laid out like the board game. Because if you remember in the board game,
That's right,
go a certain direction, you get to skip across the board and pop up in the kitchen or pop up in the library.
Yeah.
And anything with a secret passage is just awesome. So I'm glad they worked those in there.
And the way that they're paired off, I just want to note that Miss Peacock was still just, she was basically like a drunk hot mess wandering around in the dark. Like, she's just, like, screaming at the cobwebs, and, like, there's a rat that walks by, and she's like, ah! Like, she's just, like, she's terrible. She's not, searching for anything.
No, she's just screaming for no reason.
Actually,
the pair that should have gotten along is they pair Yvette the maid with Mr. Green, who all the other guys are, like, drooling over the maid, and he's not because he's supposed to be gay, although maybe he's not. But the two of them, like, should have been the buddy detectives that we were needing to see. Like, they should have actually gotten somewhere in their search, but they get nowhere. They can't even go up the stairs all the way.
I actually thought that was really funny when they're at the bottom of the stairs, and it's, like, the tightest staircase, and neither one of them wants to go in front of the other, because they're like, if I go in front, you could just kill me. And so they just have this standoff in the smallest of staircases.
They're wedged together. And I at this point, turned to my husband and was like, did her boobs just get bigger? Like, how is that possible? Because she's squeezed so tightly.
Yeah, they're like,
she's
squeezed
like popping
up there.
Out of the dress.
Yeah, I know. My daughter noted. She's just like, you see a lot of chest in all of these costumes. Like, she noticed at how booby it was.
Yes, the women are wearing very sexual dresses. Even the train wreck one who's got feathers coming out
like,
of her
even
head.
Even the older women, like, all of their boobs are hanging out all over the place. Yeah. And I was like, was this a style in the 50s?
So Miss Scarlett, who's played by Leslie Ann Warren, that dress they stuck her in, she loved it, but she couldn't move in it because they had her in a corset that was so tight. And then at the end, they got all those scenes where they're running back and forth between the rooms. They had to give her a second dress that she could unzip as they were running and then zip it up really quickly so that they could continue the scene and make it look like it was the same dress. But she had a running dress for this movie.
Do you have a final thought?
So yeah, just all these devices seem to be working really well. Like, you're moving so quickly and the pace is just picking up and picking up and the plot is escalating and the body count is getting higher and higher. And yeah, it's fun. I think they did a really good job turning a board game into a really good murder mystery.
Yeah.
Kudos, whoever had the weird idea to pitch this.
Weird idea. I mean, we'll get to the kid rating, but Lily kind of liked it too. I asked her what she thought. She's like, oh, I really liked it. And, you know, she was in it. Like, when Tim Curry is doing his thing and it's like the three endings and he's running around. It was fun. Like, she was having fun watching it. And I was too, rewatching it. So I think even though there's some cringe stuff a little bit, or that, like, you have to explain, like, who McCarthy is and, you know, why you could be blackmailed for being gay kind of thing, it's still the general pace of it still lands. We sort of felt this way about Die Hard too. Like, that movie had no right.
We did, that should have been dumber. It should. I kept saying the name of that movie implied a really stupid movie was about to happen, and it was much smarter. Same thing applies here. It's a lot smarter, better acted, good dialogue.
Why? It's kind of funny to be talking about this in the year, in basically the lead up to what I essentially think is going to be a lot of Oscar nominations for Barbie, which is a movie about a doll. I know that's not the same thing, but I mean, when done well, any kind of story could be good. Like, this is just a fun murder mystery, regardless of clue. And, you know, and this, I guess in a way that Barbie is a really good movie, regardless of the fact that it's about a doll.
With a lot of product placement, but we'll get to that one day. Yes. One day.
One day. Years from now.
Do we feel like we could rate this?
I think we can. And just to remind new listeners, perhaps, we rate this first for adults and then for kids today on a scale of 1 to 10. 1 being garbage, 10 being Princess Bride. We do adults first. Typically, Amanda, I think you go first.
Yeah.
And I'm a harsher reviewer for the new listeners who don't know that about me. But what do you think?
I think for my adult rating, I'm going to go 6.5. I'm doing that 0.5 thing.
You again. Like your 0.5s.
If I had a New Year's resolution to stop doing half a point, I'm breaking it right now. Yeah, no, this is fun to watch. And there were things I caught as an adult that I definitely didn't pick up on as a kid. Yeah. All the innuendo and, political situations that were baked into this. And it surprised me because it shouldn't be as funny as it is. And it shouldn't be as smart as it is because it's based on a board game. But here we are. So 6.5.
I am going to uncharacteristically go above you. And I think I'm going to say 7.5. I didn't want to go as high as an 8. I cheated because I looked at some previous ratings. I like to get close to an 8 or 9 or 10 when I've found something new to appreciate about this. And I think this kind of it has a mix of being a time capsule and the fact watching it now as an adult, there's so much more humor in here than I ever picked up on as a kid. So 7.5. Now we have to do hard math. What's our adult score? That's pretty high. Hold on. 14. The Order Muppet is calculating.
We're at 14.
14. Next score is we rate it on the same scale, but we imagine like for kids today. I mean, we have a focus group of 1. I didn't watch this with my son. He kind of lost interest and ran outside. This could go young. I think young kids could watch this. I think teenagers could watch this. I don't think that there's anything inappropriate. You kind of might have to have a conversation about escort services, but whatever. It's fine.
You know, it's every part of the world. Young child needs to have that conversation with their mother at one point.
There's a lot of boob in the costumes, but that's all right too.
I think your son picked up on the fact that if, like, for too young of a kid, there's so much going on here that they're just not going to follow the plot at all. And that could be annoying for a young kid. But yeah, I think there's nothing inappropriate in it.
I don't think so either. I think he would have been completely lost.
So with that in mind, I'm going to give this a 6 for kids. I think that the real gems in this movie are being said too quickly or require so much historical context that it goes over their heads. I don't think they spent enough time in the secret passageways for this to be a 7 or 8 for kids. There needed to be more secret passageways.
Again, I'm going to uncharacteristically go a little higher. I'm going to say 7 because I'm going to make the assumption, maybe not my kid. We don't have the original Clue game. We have the Harry Potter Clue game, but they get the concept. So, and it's just like a very silly but not dumb murder mystery. And it's something that they could, I think, be entertained by. And yeah, you're totally right. I think it's not like at the Home Alone level of a 10 that we both gave because, it's not timeless in that way. There's still some things that are dated. So I don't think it gets to that level of a score. But it's not dated to the point where you shouldn't watch it. Yeah, so I'm getting it a 7. I did peek at our Addams Family ratings because I was just like, my kids like loved watching that. Yeah. So I think I matched where we were. If anything, that means that we like underrated Addams Family.
We might have. We have spoken about whether we should revisit some of our earliest episodes. Oh, yeah. And we always apologize to Who Framed Roger Rabbit because we went very low on
super low.
But we didn't have a baseline at that point. We are at a combined 27. 7.
All right.
And just got to witness this, but I went way down the Order Muppet rabbit hole the last time we were talking and did an assessment of where the line is for where things tend to live up. There's a certain number that if we hit that score, it usually is something that we vote lives up.
What was that?
I don't want to spoil that.
You don't want to spoil that. Okay, so we're at a 27.
I don't want to spoil that till after we vote, but okay. I can see, I have a projection here because I can see where this number is compared
to
the
line.
Wait,
so we should remind listeners, so that's not, it's not just the score, it's not about that. We also each have to agree whether it lives up in order for us to officially deem it living up as a podcast. And we've had split decisions before, which means that the podcast does not deem something living up. So it has to be unanimous. Does it live up, Amanda?
For me?
Yeah.
Yes, this lived up.
So I think it also lives up. So congratulations to Clue. You officially live up,
hey,
according to these middle-aged ladies. So there's no hesitation here. To me, it definitely lives up. But now I'm curious where that line is with the numbers, with the scoring.
So the line that we found, just looking statistically at it, anything that is a 25 or below, we usually say no, it didn't live up. And anything a 26 and above, we tend to vote yes, it did live up.
Okay, well, this
there
was
are
close.
A couple of exceptions to that.
Yeah.
But generally, the line is between 25 and 26.
Yeah, and it's sort of hard because I think we were harsher graders earlier on. And I think this is our 25th episode, right?
This is our 25th
Woo-hoo!
Episode.
Woohoo! It's hey. Some sort of big anniversary.
It can rent a car now. The podcast is
the car
no,
rental.
I don't know what age you can rent a car.
Graduated from college.
Happy 25th.
Man. So I think that some of our scores are artificially low. Not artificially, they're lower from earlier in the podcast. We'll revisit them one day. But so a plug for listeners, maybe you disagree with us. Maybe you think this is a dumb movie. You really shouldn't think this is a dumb movie. Or have some additional commentary. What did we miss? Come find us at LiveUpPod on all the socials, at LiveUpPod@gmail.com. Leave the hate mail to yourself. That'll be for the next time we visit a Indiana Jones movie, which maybe we will do next time.
Which could be coming soon.
Could be coming soon. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Well, Happy New Year.
All right. So that was our episode on Clue. But what I thought would be fun is sometimes we start recording right before we start talking about the movie. And we just so happen to have a conversation about games that we play as adults and how it's different now when you're middle-aged. So enjoy, everybody.
All right.
I meant to record.
We should talk about adults trying to play Twister.
We should talk. So it was like peak pandemic time, like 2020 time. And we had we just put an addition in our house. So like our like kitchen area had nothing in it. There was like no furniture. So it was like the perfect, you know, Twister type of setting.
Giant game room.
Yeah, it's giant game room. So we were playing, and you know, like kids are just like made of freaking rubber. Like they could like
so
do
flexible.
A back thing with their, they could have their left leg this way, backwards with their right arm. And like just bending over, Amanda, to just put my arm down, my hand down, it was awful.
If you could like bottle up that sort of flexibility that kids have and sell it to adults, oh my God, we would pay thousands of dollars for that. So I'm just even thinking, I was trying to play soccer and I tore my calf muscle really badly like the first 30 seconds of the game. Went to my physical therapist and he was like, you know, your calves at this point are basically just like glass ready to be shattered. So you should really stop
so bad.
Pushing yourself so hard. I was like, ooh, yeah, that visual is crystal clear. I got it. Yep. Don't want to crack the glass.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, my back hurt like 10 seconds in and I just was like, I'm going to do the spinning. I'm not going to play anymore. Elena could kind of still do it, but it's like, it's hard and like the blood rushes to your head. We're all like heavier and less flexible now.
Yeah. Like I have trouble doing a plank for more than a minute. I can't imagine then trying to put my right hand on red. Yoga is exhausting.
Yeah, but that's humbling.